Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for September 17th, 2008. Listening, I'm Rob Westerveld. In this edition, we'll talk about encryption, data breaches, and the role of the CISO with Stephen Katz. Katz was CISO at Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, and JP Morgan, and is recognized as the first CISO.
When it comes to analyzing a network, protecting enterprise data, or fighting malware, you can plop down thousands of dollars for a commercial product, or you can get tons of great functionality from a free tool. Let CertSecurity.com show you how some of the industry's best free and open source tools work in our exclusive screencast series. Each month, one of CertSecurity.com's best experts will offer a step-by-step video presentation showing you how to use the most powerful tools and software, including Nessus, Snort, UTM, and so much more. And it's all free. Don't wait. Watch and learn today. Visit CertSecurity.com/screencast. That's CertSecurity.com/screencast.
And we're back. More companies are taking a closer look at data encryption. There are many options. And with us to talk about it is Stephen Katz, the former CISO at Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, and JP Morgan. He's recognized as one of the first CISOs, and he's an advocate of data encryption. In this interview, Katz lays out ways companies can choose and deploy encryption, and we'll also talk about the ever-expanding role of the CISO. Stephen, why don't we talk briefly about what we're seeing in terms of data breaches? What's your take?
I think there are two axioms that we have to sort of live with. And one, I'm paraphrasing a friend of mine at a major financial institution, data wants to be free and shared. It's just the nature of data. Mm-hmm. And the second is networks will be attacked.
Certainly.
So the combination of the two says we really have to look at a data-centric approach or data-focused approach to protecting information, regardless of where it is, where it's located, whether it's static or in transit. And I think a mistake, and that may be a bit too harsh, but concern we have to have, or recognition we have to make, is that data will ultimately become visible to people to whom you don't want it to be visible. And the answer is it has to be protected regardless of where it is. And the only way to effectively protect it is a well-implemented, well-constituted data encryption program. And the concern that we've had in the past is that when you encrypt a data string, you get a much, much larger data string. And you wind up, if you're looking at databases, losing all kinds of referential integrity and losing all your checksums that you've built into this. So the challenge has become one, and there's at least one company, and probably more, that have come up with a process called Format Preserving Encryption, where credit card numbers, personal identification numbers, personal health information, student identification numbers can be encrypted, and you maintain the size of the data fields, maintain the size of the, maintain the checksums, and be able to maintain referential integrity across databases. And the actual number itself is never really seen. So that in the case of the data breach that we've been talking about, in the case of past data breaches, you go ahead and you get an ID and a password. All you're going to do, or you intercept a transmission, all you're going to do is see a number that looks exactly like an identification number, exactly like a social security number, exactly like a medical identification number, but isn't the real number. So you wind up having a piece of data, a data string that is absolutely useless. So I think if we step back and say, it's incumbent upon every organization that's looking to protect key data fields to encrypt those data fields and to make sure you put in a well-instituted, well-protected, fully secured, effectively implemented encryption program will provide the answers, at least the good portions of the answers we need.
Sure, but isn't that easier said than done in many cases? I mean, how easy is it to deploy encryption?
I think you really have to look at two things. Is it a challenge to deploy? Is it a challenge to deploy anything? But the reality is you have a trust relationship with your customer base. One of the things we had in place when I was at Citi, we had information security awareness program. We had both chairs of Citigroup at the time standing up and saying, Citi, and you can replace this with any company name, really had two products, money and trust. If you didn't sell the trust, you would have a difficult time selling the money.
Certainly.
Right. I think any time I use an online system, an internet system, a hotel reservation system, I am trusting them to keep my information confidential. And it is, how much is that company willing to invest to maintain the trust relationship that they have with me? And I think the longer-term impact is e-commerce going to be the way to go? Is technology really going to provide the answers we need? And to do that, you have to really step back and say, I need to take a look at what is involved to implement it, to install and implement a encryption program, and really take that, you know, full length. And it's not as difficult as it may seem. The company's cryptography has come a long way from trying to figure out how you include 56-bit DES. Number of fairly good encryption companies out there that make it, I would say, not painless, but relatively painless to install and implement encryption. And if you're using a format-preserving cryptographic process, you're going to get the best of all worlds, full referential integrity, full data protection, and understanding that data will leak, and if it leaks, so what?
Sure. Yeah, but the other problem I guess a lot of companies run into is the problem of just data in general. They don't have a very good handle on their data. They don't know what data they need to be encrypting. They don't know where all the data resides. It's not all residing in a centralized place, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with larger firms where they have multiple complex systems with, you know, Let's say they are storing a certain amount of credit card information or a certain amount of sensitive information that should be encrypted. That may not be all stored in one centralized location. Might be in multiple systems.
It's like anything else, you try to eat the elephant one bite at a time, and I think you find the most critical data store and begin there. And if you get 50% of the problem, you're 50% ahead of the game. And after you get to 50%, you get another 25%. For us to agree that we're never going to get to 100%. But let's get as close as we can and let's begin. It's a complicated problem, and, you know, then we run the risk of not solving it.
Sure.
I'll break it up into bite-sized pieces. If it's the credit card, if you're dealing with credit card information, if you are a PCI-compliant kind of company, you say, well, encrypt the credit cards wherever I know they exist. And I'll probably get a large percentage of the credit card information. And as they identify more, I'll find out how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the cost of encryption. Is it becoming cost-effective for companies to deploy encryption?
My understanding, and I have, they are beginning to come down significantly. Mm-hmm. More people are rolling it out. I think you have significant numbers of companies now competing for business, and there's nothing better for reducing costs than companies competing for business. And now that format preserving encryption has become a reality, implementation is a lot more acceptable. There's nothing worse than trying to take a 16 character credit card number and turning it into 150, 180 character encrypted number. It doesn't work. And it doesn't help you with test data. It doesn't help you with maintaining databases. But if you can go ahead, and you can today, take a 16 character credit card number, come out with a 16 character encrypted credit card number that for all intents and purposes looks like a credit card number but isn't, and you can deliver that at a cost effective price, I don't see any reason why not to go ahead with it.
Let's talk about the role of a CISO. Since you have such an extensive background, so many years as a chief information security officer, what has become of the role of late, and how do you see it evolving?
Just a little bit of bragging rights. I was the first CISO in the industry.
When was that?
I was in 1995 at Citigroup. And I was fortunate enough to report that I was two down from the CEO, was John Reed at the time. And the view was, and this was really revolutionary for its time, and it's, very much, to John Reed's perspective and a fellow named Colin Crook's perspective, who was the chief technology officer, to some extent, my influence, we wanted to make information risk, information security, a business risk management issue. And a great deal of my time was spent working with senior business executives and senior operations executives and working with the Operations Risk Management Committee, which is a subcommittee of the board, in looking at security and technology risk is just another risk that had to be managed and addressed. And we're seeing much more of that now. You see more and more folks today moving into the chief risk officer role, the chief information risk officer role, who have a business perspective first, and a technology perspective or security perspective is almost a secondary role. There's an understanding that information, that businesses take risks to grow and to expand. And one of the risks you're doing is, you know, employing more and more technology to, and opening up technology to your end customer, whether it's a corporate customer or a retail customer. And recognizing the trade-offs in everything you do. And in our case, also working not only with the audit folks, but with the regulators to understand, to make sure they understood the level of trade-offs that you had to make, why you were making it, and why you were making a sound business decision. And I think more and more the CIRO or CISO is becoming a business manager first, a financial manager, and is essentially running a business within a business, where there's a marketing function, there's an operations function, there's a technology function, and there's an audit function.
Are there a lot of challenges there, and are some companies actually having dual roles? They have somebody who is a CISO and somebody else who is more of the risk-oriented, more business-oriented at the same time?
What I think you're seeing is there are companies that have CISOs/CIROs and other folks who are in charge of information security technology. Mm-hmm. So the policies, the governance, the general direction, the risk assessment programs are handled by one, and the actual implementation will be handled by the person in charge of information security technology. So the breakdown is really taking what one time was a classic security role of security admin and actually implementing product, and splitting it out so that one person, one group was responsible for setting requirements, setting what had to be done, what needed to be done, and the technology security officer would be responsible for how it's getting done. But the visibility to the board is much higher. And anytime there's one of these data breaches, and I still have a whole lot of friends who are in the doing information security in both health services and financial services, get phone calls from their board saying, tell me if this is not going to happen to us, or tell me you've got this under control. At one time, Chief Financial Officer in the elevator or in a meeting with the CEO, and they'd have an extensive discussion on the financial health of the company. Years ago, the CISO would meet with the CEO and would sort of wonder why he was there. Today, there's a comfort level. There's a way to discuss the health of the security health of the company and the risk of the company. And the CISO or CIRO has to be much more adept at working with executive management and business management. It gives a tremendous difference in focus.
Well, I think we're just about out of time. Thanks very much, Stephen. That does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.